Welcome to Game Store Profits, a podcast where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm your host, Daniel Fisher, here with our El Presidente of Panamax, Mike Perna. How you doing, Mike?
I've never played Panamax a day in my life.
You know, it's hard coming up with leader names that start with the same letter as the game I'm referencing.
It's true. I do make it challenging for you.
Yes. But I did it. I did it today. You know, and next time, I think I'm going to start doing it alphabetically next time and see what I can come up
just,
with that way.
Just go through the gaming list of all games ever.
Yes. And just go with the theme and come up with something. So, Mike, we haven't talked this way, at least, in almost a month.
It's been a while. I had to do the last one solo because I had to up and get sick, which was not fun at all. No. But yeah.
I think we were all having issues.
There's a reason why I entitled the last episode the episode that almost wasn't, because it almost wasn't.
It's not good, man. It's not good at all. I mean, Between at my house, it's been baby this and baby that and painting and all this other stuff. And, you know, I know you're starting to ramp up for baby.
I am. We are in pre-baby mode. Oh. We're in the trying to figure out what life's going to look like after baby arrives mode.
Oh, man. Just,
we'll do a special baby edition.
Yeah.
Baby where you and I just, you know, we'll do a bonus content of baby-related things.
Baby-related games. Games that you can play with baby.
No.
Because, like, right now, Samuel's favorite game is I spit the pacifier out and you put it back in my mouth. It only has one piece. Basic rule set.
Infinite replayability.
Well, the expansion comes when he can shoot it out 3 feet. And then that's when he set up targets.
So,
there
you go. Yeah. So, have you been playing anything, especially because of the fact that it's been a good long while?
Well, you know, we've had the family game nights and such, and the last one actually turned into a family movie night, and but the last game I played was at my daughter's request, and it was Carcassonne, and as she calls it, Carcassarone. You know, we played that, and you know, she tried to win, but I ended up beating everybody out because I love that game. It's a really fun game to play. Even though
now I will ask, because you're playing it with younger kids, do you bring in farmers?
We tried it this time. That's where we had some difficulty with the rules. Farmers, and we did bring in the church rules, the abbots and stuff. And that wasn't too bad. It was just the farmers that really threw my wife, not the kids, for a loop. Just kidding, wife. I know you're listening. but no, yeah, it's fun. The kids enjoy it. You know, and Andrew, I didn't think it was too difficult for him. He picked up on it really quickly. The thing that he has issues with, though, is trying to complete cities. You know, he's like, oh, this piece can go here. I'm like, no, look at the other sides. They don't match up, so you can't put that piece there. So we had to help him out a little bit.
Well, that's part of, you know, the experience of playing a game like that. Like Carcassonne is not a complex game, but it there is still a depth of strategy of figuring out where you're going to put the thing. Unless you have, like, sometimes that I've played where it's like, oh, look, another road. I wonder where I'm going to put this.
Like, I'll attach it to this other road and put my player here so I can get points.
I can say that I've played some things.
I heard you played some Guild Ball.
I did play some Guild Ball. I don't want to spend too much time talking about it because I mentioned it in my solo episode there.
Yeah, but I wasn't there. So yeah.
But you weren't there. I have so much love for Guild Ball.
That's awesome.
I can see myself going just full on neck deep into this game it's not even a question for me.
I could see you painting as well.
If I had the paint.
You have the paint.
I do not have, I have some paint. And it's leftover paint from the paint intake, so don't give me that. I have, you know, not nearly the kind of paint that I would need in order to make this happen.
Oh, come on now.
But
I think One piece at a time. One piece at a time.
But I will say, I love that game so much. I could easily... The question is not, will I get another team? It's which team, and when can I afford to pull that off?
Well, you know what? The one team that I think looks really nice, because I've seen some really good paint jobs on it, is the Brewers.
The Brewers are in the kickoff box.
Yeah, so you've got those, but I just, you know... I don't think I'll play that game since I play Blood Bowl, so I've got too much invested in it.
Yeah, it would be really hard to, like, I will say that if you wanted to, they are two completely different experiences.
Yeah.
But as far as a person who is trying to, you know, encourage fiscal responsibility in our adult lives, there really is no reason to have both Guild Ball and Blood Bowl.
But now, if you said Dread Ball, just joking, but yeah.
But I've been looking at all the other guilds and what I would enjoy and figure out, because if nothing else, I have the two teams that if I'm trying to get other people to play, they can use one of those.
Yeah.
So that frees me up that if I wanted to get, now granted, this is all speculation due to the fact that I can't be buying anything in the near future. Again, I'm going to cite upcoming baby.
Yeah.
But it does, you know, hypothetically free me up to buy a guild that I want to play that isn't in the kickoff box. And I don't know. I go back and forth between...
See it right behind your head, by the way. Sorry, guys. Yes. I went to the picture. It's right behind his head.
It really is. I could easily see myself playing as the Hunters, because they're just fantastic. And not only that, they have Bear Mascot, and Bear Mascot always wins.
Yeah.
I could also see myself playing as the Engineers, because the Engineers have, like, wood and metal robots, and come on, that's right in my wheelhouse. And I could even see myself going for the Morticians Guild. Because those dudes look creepy and fantastic. I especially love one of the newer guys. I don't remember if he got released in Season 3 or Season 2. But there's a guy called Brain Pan and Memory. And Brain Pan literally, like, summons up this little, like, zombie-looking dude that pops up on a place... other, like, off to the side on the field, and it's literally this other guy named Memory that he just can summon up out of the field. And I'm like, oh, that's hilarious. But yeah, no, you've done a horrible thing.
I know.
And I love you for it.
Well, you know, it wasn't just me, but I felt you needed to get that. So.
But yeah, no, I enjoy the heck out of it. But I haven't played that recently.
Well, it's because all the future games that Mr. Mike Pernod is going to be playing is going to be made of wood and brightly colored colors, very large dice, possibly some felt.
No felt in this house.
Oh, you know, Chickaboom has felt.
Oh, that's true. But what I've been playing recently was another game of Seafall.
Yeah.
And... I briefly mentioned it, you know, the last time I mentioned that we had done the prologue, but now that we've played our first legit game, I completely understand why people don't like this. Because I got kicked in the teeth this first game. I was about ready to rally and do, like, four different things all in one turn to put me, even if it wasn't going to put me in the front of the pack, it was going to put me in a really good position for later on. Instead, my buddy goes and does a raid that will basically, you know, because the way it breaks up is there are goals that you have to do. And every time you do one of these big goals, something will happen and you get a ton of glory. Kind of the way that a round ends is that once somebody has hit a certain amount of glory, that's it. So he hits the glory ending the round. And I'm like, oh, so here I am in dead last. And there was nothing I could do to stop it. fantastic. Glad we had that happen.
Yeah.
So I completely understand, especially because of the fact that scores are cumulative. So the glory you get in one game will be added on to the glory you get in future games. At the end of the campaign, whoever has the most glory is the winner. So here I am. My buddy's got like 12, you know, like 8, like 7. I've got 3. And I'm like, all right. I see it. And I found myself like kind of holding myself back because I'm like, you jerk. One more turn. And I would have turned this all around. But no, you had to end the game.
Well, I mean, it's not a game of letting your friends take over. I mean, it's just, you've got to win.
No, it's exactly right. And to be fair, to give the fuller picture, once you get into these larger games, the actual full games, the order in which you do things, like, it actually means that it's going to be harder for him to get going in the start of the next game. And I'm going to have a ton of bonus. Like, I think I get like 6 or 7 extra coins.
Yeah.
For, you know, that the other guys won't have because I got shafted this game. Whereas he literally has enmity with all of us. And what enmity does is it means that we can hit him across his face and he can't do anything about it. So for every enmity token that he has, that the person can literally smack him across the face and he can do nothing. It's like we're even now. And so the fact that he starts off with all of those means it's going to get complicated for him real quick. But as much as I can see the problems and the reasons people won't like it, I all I can say is what our group likes, and our group is digging the heck out of this game. It's really interesting to see how the stories are developing, how these provinces and these nations are taking up shape. Like, it's really cool because, like, we're making decisions and we're like, yeah, you know, okay, this one probably seems like we could game it and be like, this is clearly the better option.
Yeah.
Cause you generally get the tenor of how these are written. So you're like, okay, if I do this, things are going to go better for me. Okay, I can, but we find ourselves going, what would my guy do? what would my person do? Like, there's one guy, the guy who actually ended the game earlier than I wanted him to, he is going on the fact that he is colonial, he is empire, he is England, basically. Yeah. And so whenever he's given an opportunity to do something nice with the natives or get something good for himself, he has always picked get something good for himself. Right. He starts saying things like, no, I will not participate in this heathen ceremony. And on the other side, my guys, because you're given like a little bit of a story blurb when you pick your province. And it says that my guys used it were former like slaves and oppressed people. And they came here looking for a new start. So my guys are all happy and sunshine when it comes to the natives. And, you know, in the prologue, it helped me out a lot. This round, I didn't really get a chance to, but you know, that's kind of my MO now, is that if I get a chance to side with somebody and kind of build them up, I'm going to do it. And at the same point, I'm kind of stockpiling weapons. Like, one of the first things you get to do is make a choice based on one of the story elements. And depending on which choice you make, you get a kind of a permanent bonus. Well, mine gave me this description called the Mighty, which basically means the soldiers guild is now on my side. So whenever I choose to do the actions that the soldiers guild gives me, which is to sail, to collect taxes, or to raid, normally you can only do 2 of those in a turn, but I can do 3. And so I'm kind of planning in the future, like, yeah, we're gonna Cold War this. We're gonna, you know, secure peace by preparing for war.
It's sometimes the only way to do it, according to history.
So I'm hoping that this terrible setback of an awful first game is going to turn around in later rounds, and I'm hoping that I'm going to have better experiences later. But here's the thing, at the end of the day, I have always said that if you just get curb stomped beat, like not even beat, like absolutely curb stomped, and you still walk away saying, man, this game is fun.
Yeah.
You're dealing with a good game.
I don't know. The closest I've gotten so far to a legacy game, and we haven't played it yet, it's the Battle for Hogwarts, or Hogwarts Battle. We just got it, and I know it's not like a legacy game where you rip cards up, but you have to play it based on the books.
Right, so, and from what I've heard, from all the people I've heard talk about that game, it starts off really slow because there's not a lot to it,
yeah.
But then as more and more books get involved and more plot lines happen, yeah, more interesting actions start revealing themselves.
Yeah, so my son is currently reading the Harry Potter books with his mother. We will not let him watch a Harry Potter movie until after he reads the books. So this is what's going to make this hopefully push him to read quicker, is the fact that we're only going to be able to play through the first two books. And then if he really gets hooked on it, you know, he's going to have to barrel through book three and then barrel through book four. So I'm hoping, you know, for a 7-year-old, he's reading pretty well. So I just hope this helps push him through that. And we were going to try to play it this week, but there's a parade and my daughter's in it, and I guess we got to go to that.
I guess there's, you know, somebody's got to, like, go and say hi.
Yeah, I know, just because she's on the dance team. I'm just kidding, Isabel. I love you. I know you don't listen, but if you ever do, Daddy cares.
But yeah, no, I don't know. I'm really excited to see what Seafall has in store, because we unlocked our first, the game has a bunch of boxes. Like this is not new. If you've ever played Pandemic or Risk or any of that, there's all these boxes, and it basically, when you do certain things in the game, those boxes unlock. Well, we unlocked our first one at the end of this game, and my goodness, There was just so much stuff. We're getting to the point where we can discover new islands and put them on the board. We're getting to the point where we have, like, research, which is brand new. We added, like, 6 or 7 different rules to the rule book. And we're now at the point where we can raid each other's provinces, which they didn't let us do beforehand. So now we can do that. So, yeah, it's getting nutty. There's still part of me, like, granted, it's still early, and I've heard that there's a point later on that if you're gonna stop playing prematurely, that's where it's gonna be. Heck, even Sean was talking to me about that.
Yeah.
So I have no idea if that's gonna happen down the road, but right now we're still in the phase of being super giddy. When we opened that box, and the one guy kind of opened it up and looked in, and he was like, oh my goodness, look at this stuff. Like, it was so much fun, and it was so interesting to us to see how everything develops. The idea of you know, going out beyond what – it was great because we kind of made a Moana reference, because we're like, we're going out beyond the reef at this point.
Yeah.
And there's so much other stuff that's involved now, like currents and whirlpools, and it's becoming dangerous to go sailing out, to go exploring. So, I don't know. I'm super excited for the potential. It's been a fun experience so far with the prologue and the first game. It's been fun. But now that we're adding more of this new stuff and adding more to the exploration, so it's no longer becoming just a race to see who can get to a place first, but literally now it's like, okay, now what do you want to do? Like, not all of us are going for the same thing. So we're not going to be stepping on each other's toes anymore. I mean, there will be to some point, but it's quite possible that we're getting to a place where we can all make actions and none of it is going to overlap with the other players. So I'm super curious to see how it all goes. I'm really digging this game. It was a no-brainer for the $10 I tossed in to make this happen.
Well, if you only pay $10, I guess it's fine.
Literally, well, because we got it on sale for $30, and then all of us threw in like $8 or $10, and that covered the game and shipping. So I'm like, you know what? It definitely worth $10. I've already laid claim to the board. If nobody else wants it, I'm going to get that sucker framed and hang up on my office wall here. But that's not the only game I played, because I had a buddy who went to Origins.
This is that race car game.
It is that race car game.
Oh, my goodness.
The actual name of it is Pit Crew. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, guys. Sorry for the noise I made, because Pit Crew was just another game that Mike kept talking about.
It's fantastic.
I do want to play it. It looks pretty fun. I do enjoy that concept of being able to play a board game about racing. I think Impact Ventures has got one with the roller derby game.
Yes, I've heard about that game, but I haven't played it or know anything about it.
Yeah, I thought about getting him to play it with me this year at Gen Con. So
I really enjoy Pit Crew because of the fact that it's so simple a concept. The way it works is that everybody has a race car.
Yeah.
And you have to play cards to, quote unquote, fix up your car. So there's a couple different things that you have to do. Every tire has a number on it. And you either have to play a number that's one higher or one lower than the card before it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've played four cards on a tire, that tire is taken care of. So you have to do that for all four tires. You also have to fill up the fuel tank. So you're playing, there's a number on top of the car, which if you've ever watched NASCAR, then you know that that's just what they do. But in this, the number on top of the car is the total amount of fuel you need to put in it. So you're trying to play cards to hit that number.
Right.
And then later on in later rounds, you have to actually deal with the engine. So you have to play doubles on the engine in order to make that work.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing about it is, and the thing that makes this game really entertaining and not just, oh, that sounds kind of boring, is the fact that this is all happening at the same time. And so you're doing this in teams. Well, you're not necessarily doing it in teams, but I would recommend doing it in teams. So everybody's got cards and you're like, okay, I've got this. I've got, you know, if you play a four, I can play a three. I can do this. We can finish this off. If you like, I'm looking for low numbers to top off this gas tank. Like, and because you can't show each other your cards, but you're free to talk about it all you want.
Yeah.
So you've got people shouting and saying, I've got this. I've got this. I've got this. Oh my goodness. It's so much fun. And you start – even as frantic and crazy as this is, there is still some strategy to it because, one, you can not necessarily do things properly. If you want to get out there and get to the track first, you can do things like use numbers out of order or not play one of the cards or do stuff like that. But for everything that is wrong, you're giving penalties. So you're hoping you might be able to be like, okay, I'm going to run out real quick and get on the track and get my car running. That way, mm-hmm. no matter if we have a penalty on this, we're going to be out there so early that we're going to just blow by them anyway.
Right.
You've got things like all the numbers are either black numbers or white numbers. And if you use all the same color, you actually get a speed boost. So then you start saying, okay, because this actually happened a couple times I've played, is the idea that you can take a little bit more time to get the right cards. So everybody else is already on the track. But if you make it so that you're getting speed boosts on all your stuff, anything they're doing on the track is going to become null and void. Because all your bonuses, you are going to fly past them. And another interesting thing is that the game plays in three rounds, and in between rounds, you actually get what are called monkey wrench cards. And the monkey wrench cards actually do like bonuses for you. Like there's one called drafting, which says that if you end the round in the back of the pack, you actually move forward.
Right.
Like
that's cool.
So there's all sorts of stuff like that. And I just love the simultaneous action, the real time action of this game, because if you're the first person to get your car out, you start grabbing a die and rolling it. And every time you roll a six, you move your car farther down the track. So there have been like we were playing with three different teams, and there were so many times I've lost track that you just have the entire team going six, 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 please run, move the car, move the car. You just had like, and all the while you've got the other teams getting nervous because you keep hearing them yell six and moving across. Like it's such for such a light game. It is such an incredibly awesome gaming experience.
What's the age limits on that game?
I don't know what the published age limit, but I could easily see. I mean, basically all it is can you count?
Yeah.
If you can count, you can play this game.
Okay. I might see about getting that game in.
If you can count, because all, like I said, the tires, you just have to be able to do one higher or one lower.
Yeah.
The gas tank is straight up simple addition, and the engines are a pair of.
Yeah. My son likes counting games, so.
So yeah, no, it's great. I'm looking forward to this because I think I mentioned this in the past. Like the reason I got it was because I told my mother about it, who is a raging NASCAR fan. And not only is she a raging NASCAR fan, but she's always enjoyed, you know, simple old school card games. Yeah. So at its core, this is very similar to a lot of old school card games. And so my mom's actually looked at me and she goes, no, I'm buying it. When you get your hands on this, I'm buying it for you. So I,
you can always bring her down here, by the way, because we have the Bristol Motor Speedway.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, trust me. Yeah. But it'll be super fun because my mom isn't a gamer. My mom isn't even kind of, she's not even gamer adjacent. And yet she is super excited to play this game about moving little wooden cars around a track and shouting at each other. Because the reason it struck me is because of the fact that it has that table presence. It gets people wondering, what are you playing here? What is going on? That, and I'm not going to lie, I might have been biased because my first game of it I ever played, I ended up beating Jeff Engelstein.
That's pretty good.
It's, you know, it's a fun thing to be able to say that your very first time you played it, you beat the guy who designed it. We went up against Team Designer and won because it was Jeff and Jason Tagmeyer from Button Shy. So we went up against Team Designer and we came home the victor. So that might have given me a little bit of a pleasant experience with this game. But at $25 retail, dude, there's no reason not to get this game, if you ask me. It is so good. It's so fun. The entire game, if it takes you more than 15 minutes, you're trying too hard. Like,
well, I might have to get it if it's a Gen Con this year.
It should be. They had it at Origins. They are I believe it's set to come out this month. I believe. So I doubt that it'll be at Gen Con.
Yeah, I haven't created a list of things I want to get at Gen Con yet.
You can check my list of things.
No, I will be going because I'll probably have to help Kevin go through the list of games to find dice. So before we go. So that usually takes all of a Saturday.
But I really enjoy this game. I'm super glad that I got it. I'm glad I could convince my buddy to smuggle it back from Origins for me.
Smuggle.
And it's really good, and I'm really entertained by it. I have not had a bad experience of it. So kind of going back to the whole Seafall thing and the idea that there's a reason why people don't like this game. And I understand that. And especially because it is a slow start. Like I said, there's whole sections of gameplay that I haven't even seen yet. And we've put in hours in this game. So I fully get that. But there was a recent blog that got put up He put it up on his Facebook, and he put it up on Board Game Geek. Ignacy Cevicek, the man behind Portal Games, put up a blog post. And I will say this, if you are even kind of interested in the goings on of making a game and the design process and the playtesting process and all that stuff, if that is even something you kind of enjoy, you need to follow Ignacy's blog, because this dude is on point and he has no problem just talking about all the stuff that goes into making a game. And he also doesn't care about being kind about it. Sometimes when he thinks that somebody's being a jerk, he calls them out. And this was one of them. He basically talked about, it's funny because he even starts it with, "I shouldn't have done this, but I was tired after a 10-hour flight." So you already know that this is going to be a fun one. And he talked about how he was on a Facebook group and somebody was complaining about The Godfather. And he was saying how it's not balanced and anything that kills, you know, that does this is overpowered and can't, you know, is breaks the game and it's completely useless. And he said, "I played it twice." And Ignacy just went off, because it's really silly. It's downright stupid and self-aggrandizing to think, "I've played this game twice and I know how to break it," when somebody has been spending months and months, if not years, designing, playtesting, and redoing this game, to say, "I played it twice and I've broke your system." And granted, everybody's going to have an opinion about the new hotness and everything like that, but even Ignacy's game, Cry Havoc, which I'm going to say, Cry Havoc is, like I've often said to you guys, that I have a personal wish list and a ministry wish list. And ideally, you want games that hit both, but that doesn't always happen. Cry Havoc is on both. Like, this game is really interesting. It's got cool miniatures. I love the battle system in this game. The battle system is really unique, and I really, really like it. And it's an asymmetric game. Every group has their own playstyle. So before you can even think about saying, "Okay, this is how this game works," you would literally have to, bare minimum, play it, I think it's 4 times, bare minimum, because that's how many factions are in the game. And since each one plays differently, you have to at least try them once. And Ignacy said this guy came on and said, I said, "Oh, this game is utterly unbalanced and broken." And Ignacy says, "Well, why, it's not. We spent a lot of hours making it solid. I don't understand what you're saying." And this guy says, "I played it once and sold it. Thanks."
It reminds me of the person that's like, "I lost, so this game's horrible. If I lose this game, it's just not a good
game. It's not a good game because I'm not good at it."
Yeah.
But that, like I'm saying, to understand Cry Havoc, you at minimum have to play it 4 times. Because otherwise there are entire strategies that you've never even thought of yet. You have not been confronted with how that faction plays. This guy played it once and said it's utterly unbalanced and broken and sold it. And it got me thinking. I'm literally probably going to do an article about this, because of the fact that I travel in, seminary graduate circles, I've discovered that there's the more and more I work with the gaming community and the church leadership community, the more I realize that gamers and theologians have a lot more in common than they think. And a lot of it's not good.
The negative side of things.
Right. It's the idea that I know all there is to know about subject A. And thus, whenever anything that is claiming to be subject A is different to the way I think about it, it is automatically wrong. It is at fault.
Yes. I completely understand this because, you know, Minecraft, for example, you know, people complain, and I'm going to video games, I understand that, they complain about, you know, you say, well, I'm going to set up a Minecraft server, I'm going to run Spigot, I'm going to run this whatever to keep people from blowing your stuff up, from griefing you, and all this stuff. They're like, why don't you do this, because I read an article one time on this, and it seemed like this was better than what you want to run there. You know, even though it's my server, and I could run what I want to run, you know, people would still complain, and some people won't even get on your server because it's not running the plugins that they want to play with.
Well, I mean, it's the same across so many different things. Like for video games, I remember probably the biggest offender was when I was playing World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
And apparently it's not new that I like, you know, putting dwarves in classes that dwarves were not meant to occupy. Because I was playing a dwarf rogue in Warcraft. Now, yeah. Warcraft is a very mechanical game. It's a game where you get things that have better numbers so that your numbers are bigger than the other player's numbers.
Right.
So it is a game that you literally can game. Like, somebody will crack it and say, this is what you do. And so, one, me playing a dwarf rogue when numbers are all that matter automatically put me on a lower tier. But then there were so many times when it was so long ago, I barely remember, but there was something in the meta that's like dwarves need to rogues need to have hammers. So if you're not a hammer rogue, you're wrong. And I look at it, I go, no, I have an entire storyline about how my guy uses daggers. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And so I would get like hate mail about the fact that I'm running a dwarf rogue with daggers. And I'm like, I'm having fun and you people need to back off.
Well, yeah. And with me though, I don't like high fantasy games that have guns.
Oh, I love that.
I don't. And it just bothers me because high fantasy games shouldn't have guns. That's why I'm still trying to wrap my head around Pathfinder.
Yes, Pathfinder has a gunslinger class now.
Yeah, I know. And I'm just like, but this is high fantasy. Why? But anyway.
But see, and that's exactly the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like every time somebody asks me, like, what game should I get? I'm like, yeah, I really need to know you better before I can suggest that to you.
Right.
Because there are games that I will, like, I've been blatant about the fact that Scythe has eclipsed Blood Rage. Blood Rage has been knocked down to number 2. Scythe is number 1. Oh my goodness. I know so many people that I would never suggest Scythe to them because it's not what they want. As much as I can talk about what I feel is the objective superiority of that game over other games, there are people who I talk to that would never even dream of sitting down to Scythe, nor would I want them to, because I know what they come to games to do. The problem is that we get this puffed up attitude that says, I know what's best. I can't remember, like, I've heard it from so many different places. I can't remember exactly which one said it first, but there's this idea of you can't knock somebody else's concept of fun.
Right.
Ultimately, that's what it comes down to. Ultimately, this is a form of entertainment. These games that we play are entertaining. Yeah, do we want them to be designed well? Sure we do. Do we want them to be well put together? Of course. But ultimately, the thing is, are you having fun with it? And that's not something that can be objectively answered. And yet that doesn't stop us from coming up with the objective answer.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know for a fact that like I said, you know, theologians and board gamers have a lot in common. Like, I've lost track of the number of times when people have come in saying, oh, let's have a discussion on this topic. And it's not a discussion. They use that word. I keep wanting to, you know, just have just ready on a side file, just the GIF from Princess Bride. You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think that it means.
Yeah. And discussion always, when you talk about theology, discussion really means that it's an argument.
Well, it's not even an argument. It literally becomes you're either with me or you're a heretic.
Yeah. And you know, I've seen so much. It's kind of like throwing the baby out with bathwater because, like, I've seen, like, pastors have, like, I mean, archives and archives of really great sermons, right? But then they say one thing that everybody doesn't agree with, and now they're the worst person in the world. And if you listen to their sermons, you're going to the naughty place. And if you go to their church, it's even worse. And just because they said one thing. But yet, they've got thousands of other sermons that are perfectly in line with gospel. And it's just that one thing. They may have misspoke.
I really don't. Because if I mention the details of this, it's going to hijack the conversation. So I'm not gonna.
Okay.
But there is a prominent preacher. He's a lecturer, a preacher, a theologian, an author. The dude's known. And he recently came up and said that, and again, I'm not even going to bring this up because it's going to hijack the conversation to go to other places, but he came out that he changed his opinion on Hot Topic A.
Yeah.
And literally every theology-based Facebook group that I was in today could do nothing but say, oh my goodness, how awful is this person? How wrong is this guy? I can't believe he would do something so shameful. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, this guy has done so many good things. In fact, some of these people who are saying that he's the devil last week were saying he's the epitome of what the church should be. So I found myself just sitting there, and Ignacy's blog hit me so perfectly because he talks about the fact that everyone is so in on the first impression, must speak, must give my opinion, must react, when in the game context, this stuff needs to be ruminated and thought over and processed. You need to do more than one play because you're not even beginning to understand everything. The idea that if you're constantly changing everything of who you are based on the newest, hottest, you know, instant reaction, then we're all just going to be making crap. And so in this context, in this theological context, everyone wants to, like, must be the first one to write a blog post complaining about this person's, you know, opinion. When really the first thing I want to do is like, oh, you've changed your mind. Why? How did you come to this? What is your thought process? But that doesn't suffice. You must react. You must, you know, give opinion. You must be the first person. And I don't want to be like it's the media's fault because people use that way broader than they should lately. But in a way, I won't even say media. It kind of is, but it's especially true with all of our social media stuff. I will sing the praises of social media till the cows come home. But what it has done is you need to be the person that grabs the attention. You need to be the person that gets that headline, that gets people talking, gets people sharing, gets people doing whatever. And you know, so much of that is tied to being the first person to react or the first person to quote unquote destroy this person.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There are a few things lately that have upset me more than when people are saying this destroys this person's argument because if you can literally destroy somebody's argument in 3 minutes, you don't understand their argument.
Well, that's the thing, that we don't walk in their shoes at all. and I'll go back to the theology of this. It's a, and you know, if somebody changes their mind on something, right? It's, you know, usually because they're coming from a different place than we are, you know, that you are or I am, and that they have gotten a different experience with it. But like, we don't know what that experience is, you know, and so that's why they change their mind. And again, we'll never understand that until we walk with them and talk with them, and try to understand. Sorry, I know I kind of got off on tangent.
No, no, you're good. Because if there's one thing that I keep coming back to, I'm probably not going to do it. It's getting late, so I might not do it tonight. But in the near future, I'm going to be putting out the next Bard and Bible that will happen before this episode goes live. And the one thing that I'm continuing to bring up, because I've brought it up, you know, in lots of other places, but I have a high view of Scripture. Okay. Yeah. I have a super high view of the value of the Bible. I believe in the inerrancy of the Bible. These are things that I hold to. But as much as I hold to the inspiration of Scripture, the inerrancy of Scripture, the value of Scripture, I also know that while it's inerrant, while it is without fault, I'm not.
Right.
My reading of it is not. And what I think this comes down to is both in this board game context and in this theology context, is a complete and utter lack of humility. Because we must always put down the wrong, and clearly the wrong is never us.
Right.
Clearly the wrong is never what we hold to. The wrong is always the other. And I don't know about you, but I know for me, my theology has changed in some areas. In some areas, it hasn't. In some areas, I still completely agree with what I've always been taught.
If you would have looked at me, you know, 20 years ago, you would not think I was the person I am today. I mean, and that's just from growing up and staying in the Word of God for me and, you know, learning.
I don't know. It's bothering me, the fact that we have gotten to a point where we have to, we no longer have discussion.
Yeah.
Because, and I think this comes down to the fact that we no longer care. But no, I can't even say that. We do care.
I think we boil it down, like, you know, instead of arguing, I guess, or discussing our beliefs, we just say, okay, I'm Baptist, or okay, I'm Lutheran, or okay, and so, like, you know, we present that, and then we're like, okay, so if you can't accept me for what I am, you know, I'm not willing to invest any more time in you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and that's the not caring part, is that, okay, well, then they just walk away. I know people that won't be friends with people unless they are the same denomination. And I don't mean to be bringing denomination in this, folks, but yeah, I mean, I, you know, because they want people that understand what they go through and what they believe in and all that. So,
well, and I'm not going to go into all the details because it's not mine to do, but my mother-in-law just went into a Facebook group, and the Facebook group is about discussing theology, and she basically got called a heretic. And I, you know, Susan was talking to me about what the whole point of the discussion was, and I'm like, no, that's not even kind of heresy. Again, I'm not going to go into details because before I know it, that will become what people take away from this.
Well, she was discussing Dungeons and Dragons, guys, and how we should all play it. And
but,
just kidding.
But but she went into this Facebook group to have discussions with people. And yeah, did she think that they were going to be like-minded people? Yeah, she did. But here's the thing. She's getting lambasted for something that isn't even that pivotal. Like, it's important to discuss this theology. I'm not one that says that, you know, having informed opinions about this deeper stuff doesn't matter. Because it does. But it shouldn't matter to the point where we disregard each other. Like I said, it's not that we're not caring. It's that we're caring too much in the wrong place. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
We're caring too much about making sure that we root out some preconceived awful. And really, I love, you know, seeing what Ignacy's put in his blog. I love hearing him talk about his games. I love talking about, because one thing that he and I have talked about a bunch on Twitter is Nirashima Hex, which is a fantastic game, which I don't own other than in digital form, but oh my goodness, it's great. But there are like, I've lost track. I think there's like something like 10 or 12 different factions in that game, and each one plays completely differently. So how on earth can you say that one is unstoppable and one is, you know, unbalanced when there's that many differences? Unless you have played all of them, because I promise you that, yes, in certain situations, some of them are really good, but at the same point, this other faction, all you need to do is play them and you can utterly destroy them. There is a way around every perceived unbalanced, any perceived position of being overpowered. Because these people put in months of work to make that happen. Yeah. And to say, I put in 35 minutes and already know more about this thing than this person who has spent months, if not years, of their life working on it. That is so obnoxious. It's not even prideful. It's obnoxiously prideful. It is utterly unfounded. And I think that if nothing else in this episode, I want to just call out that we need to come to a place of humility that says, and I, you know, I think I've even brought this up in past episodes. Like, I think this has been a theme lately, and I think it's been a theme in our episodes because there's such a desperate need for it. We need to have the humility that says, I can learn something from this other person, that just because this person views things differently than I do does not mean everything they have to say is wrong. There's a place for understanding. There's a place for appreciation. There's a place for looking to get a deeper grasp and understanding of what they're saying, even if you still don't agree with them. That you don't have to destroy. That you don't have to go about the business of proving them to be inferior and stupid. That you can literally say, I understand now how this person has come to this conclusion. I do not agree with that conclusion, but I now have an appreciation of how we got here. To give credence and value to the work that goes into coming to a decision. Because there is work. And if there isn't, then it's obvious. You don't have to destroy that because it destroys itself. Most of these decisions come at the end of work. Hard, serious, thoughtful work. And I think it's time that we remind ourselves that we are not the end-all and be-all of things. Heck, from a theology standpoint, that should be pivotal, that we are not the end-all and be-all of any of this. That God is the end-all and be-all. And unless he started going around making us perfect interpreters of his word, which, by the way, he didn't, because all you need to do is look at church history and see that the people who were reading the same Bible we're reading thousands of years ago, they read it different than we did. They have. I think it's important that we realize that we are still learning, that we still have much to learn from those who come before, and we'll have stuff to learn from people who come after us. And that a disagreement does not mean that you should disregard. That the thought and effort that is put forth is of value and should be treated as such. It's time that we remember that we're human. And so is everyone else. And we're all just trying to figure this crap out.
Very well said.
don't know. It's been bugging me lately. I've grown very tired of everyone saying that they are 100% right and not acknowledging the other.
Yeah, well, I've gotten to a point in my life where I just ignore stuff like that.
You must do a lot of ignoring.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where I've developed a thick skin and it comes with old age. We'll get there one day.
There will be a time when we just say, get off my lawn.
I've actually said that in the digital, get off my server.
All right. I think we need to wrap up this episode here.
Yeah.
Daniel, what do you have anything on the horizon that people should be looking out for?
Well, we have Gen Con coming up next month. We have a full team, but we can take more if you want to go. And if you don't want to go but want to help out, just contact me because I have missionaries that do need money for this that are struggling right now. So just, you know, contact me. I will point you in the direction of donating money to these guys. And it's going to be a great team. We added, as you know, your friend Dave Mattingly to the group and Mr. Christian Gamer Guild himself. And we're excited about him. You know, other than that, not really a lot going on in the Fisher household. You know, I am getting ready to start ramping back up with the game days as soon as school starts because it's a little bit better down here because kids actually want to stay inside a little bit. So, and well, not kids, but adults as well during the fall.
Well, for me, I am constantly working on getting more stuff out there. Like I said, I'm going to get Bard and Bible up even before this episode happens. I know I've been enjoying Bard and Bible. I'd love to hear more from you guys. A handful of folks have gotten back to me saying they really appreciate those. So I will continue to do them. I know that I'm not going to Gen Con. I am trying to desperately hoard all my vacation days and squirrel them away so that when baby comes, I can spend time with my wife and my baby. So I am sadly not going to be going to much of anything in the near future. But there are a ton of people who are just awesome people that are going to go to Gen Con. And you should go, if you're going to be in that area, you should go and say hi to them for me. Folks like the guys at Satellite Games, they're going to be there. And so many different cool media creators. Marty Cannell is going to be there. I believe Vanessa's going with him. I'm not sure, but Tony's going to be out there this year. The Secret Cabal guys are going to be there. Just a ton of awesome people are at Gen Con, and you should go see them because they are fun people who are willing to talk and play games and have fun with you.
And we forgot, if you haven't done so yet, go vote for the Innies. Vote for the Cyclopedia for an Innie this year.
If you don't know what the Innies are, every year Gen Con, there's an organization that puts together the Innies. They are traditionally role-playing based games awards, and it's basically stuff that resources and other materials that are out there and people who are creating those resources, and it's basically a celebration of what's going on in the hobby. Well, this year, TR got, you know, said, hey, I'm doing this thing called Cyclopedia. And we had a bunch of people from the committee come by the site and check out Cyclopedia and see what it's about. And we ended up getting nominated this year. Got nominated for Best Blog. TR does phenomenal work, and I'm never going to stop saying that. Whether he gets this any or not, he does phenomenal work. He 100% deserves this nomination, and I'm doing everything I can to make sure that he is going to get this award. When I post this episode, I will put the link to the any voting. There's a lot of cool stuff out there. There's a ton of amazing stuff. One thing that pops off the top of my head, Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff is up for podcast. Those guys are awesome. Daniel, you have a friend who's doing the pirate coins, which is, I believe it's in the accessory category.
Yeah, it's, I guess, accessory and game bits or whatnot. I don't know the exact term for that one. It's the Pirate Corns. He's actually in the tavern, guys. His name's Drew Folk. And he owns Norse Foundry. So makes some beautiful dice and some coins. I use his coins, and I'm not trying to sell his coins right now, but I do use his coins because I play Savage Worlds. And you have to have bennies, which are, you know, normally poker chips. But I use those coins. They're great. My kids love them.
We gave, he actually gave us a couple sets of his coins to give away at TavernCon. And I will say that they were one of the things I was super jealous that I could not win. Because they are super pretty. So, there's all that. And again, if nothing else, we'd love it if you go vote for those guys because they do awesome stuff and deserve their awards. But if nothing else, go to the Any Voting and under Best Blog, put a number one next to Cyclopedia and click on the vote button. We would greatly appreciate that. I'm going to work super hard to get TR this award because the dude does phenomenal work. It is the easiest bit of editing I ever do in life because TR basically says, here's my thing. And I said, looks awesome, and I don't have to do at most I've ever done is like correct a capitalization or a rogue bit of punctuation. Like
with me you have to bust out the grammar book.
With you there is significantly more editing process. But yeah, TR is a dream. The dude does phenomenal work and he deserves this award. So go out, vote early, vote often. And let's get TR this any.
Yeah.
All right, all that said, we're going to bring this to a close. Always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.